podcast is brought to you by The Average Male Magazine, opening your eyes to the wonderful men around you. Subscribe to the magazine by visiting averagemailmag.com.
Bear Podcast, the podcast for bears and cubs, episode 177. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Bear Podcast. This is Nard.
And this is Ray, and we have a special guest with us today, Dr. John.
Hello, Dr. John.
Thank you very much for having me today.
Yes, and we're here. Welcome to the Bear Podcast Studios, I guess. We're doing it here in the game room here upstairs.
Well, actually, I met Dr. John through a friend of mine, Victor. John was finishing his doctoral studies in Florida, if I remember correctly.
Correct.
And your partner, John, moved to Houston for a good job, and y'all did the long distance thing for a little while, but his partner John stayed with my moved in and lived with my friend Victor for a while. So that's how I met him, and then eventually I met Dr. John.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've kind of been running into each other off and on in the same circles. And I was at a Christmas party at a friend of ours, Ray, a mutual friend of ours, and we got talking, and he got talking about some of the studies that he had done on gay relationships, and I said, oh, that's cool. Maybe we need to bring that up and do a special love episode. Or actual relationship episode, because...
Yeah, well...
What's love got to do with it?
I think I was talking too much that night, too, yeah. Because I was talking a lot about my...
This would have been an interesting episode for a Valentine's episode, but we're doing it early today, so...
Yeah.
Early Valentine's. But yeah, mainly we're going to talk about... relationships, right?
Correct.
And that's you pretty much your specialty. So about a background about yourself, what do you do?
I'm a psychologist. I work for the state of Texas at Rust State Hospital. Prior to that, I was working for for Lauderdale Hospital at a Pride unit, and most of our patients, of course, were gay. With mental illness, including substance abuse. And I did a lot of research on gay couples. What got me interested in that subject was, of course, being gay and not knowing what works, what would help my relationship works, because I believe in a good, healthy relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It scares me to be in a good relationship. So... when I met my partner, like Ray said, John, he was a wonderful person that I knew I want to spend the rest of my life with. But I need to figure out what helps me stay in that kind of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it got me to start studying. And I'm very fortunate that I picked that subject because I found it very passionate. You know,
about the gay community.
The gay community itself, you know, it's moving to Texas. It's been quite interesting as compared to living in Fort Lauderdale because there's more openness.
Oh, yeah. I know a lot of people there in Fort Lauderdale, and they do have a lot of they're very, very open there with the gay community there, very accepting.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard here in Texas. You moved here. When did you move here?
About 4 years ago.
4 years ago, okay.
And now working in the East Texas at the hospital, I mean, I'm not sure if they're aware of such thing as gay relationship.
No, they don't see it that way. Mm.
So
it's just another psychological abnormality.
That's what they're saying.
Yeah. Actually, just a little subject. I was watching a movie, a Donald Strachey movie, which is The Gay Detective. And this movie was about a guy that was doing convertive therapy to help gays go straight, and it was very interesting. It was very true what the guy was saying, but it was very funny how a lot of people still see it as a psychological disorder and not a way of life. So,
mm-hmm.
So, but oh, yeah. the big thing in the movie was, I thought it was interesting that the guy said it's a choice to be gay or not to be gay.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, is it really a choice?
I think you're born with it.
Yeah. So, but I mean, that's just, you know, some of the stuff you fight with. And I know you being in the profession, that I'm sure you have to deal with some existing prejudices.
Mm-hmm.
I can't talk this morning. My mouth stopped up. So
prejudices.
Yeah, that word.
Okay.
My mouth stopped up this morning. So, but anyway, back to the issue of relationships. I thought it was, after us meeting and talking, that it'd be a good thing to talk about some relationships. And, you know, because I've had a 7-year relationship with someone,
mm-hmm.
and I'm almost on 7 years with the second relationship. So, you know, I've met people that have been in a 45-year relationship. I mean, you usually don't think about gay people staying together that long. I mean, it's not, I mean, you have two kind of different cultures. You got the male gay culture and the female gay culture. I mean, you got lesbians that they go on a date and the U-Haul is packed up and they're mm-hmm. moving in together. And
yeah, the proverbial U-Haul.
Yeah, and they're mm-hmm. best friends for the rest of their life. And then you got the gay couples that date for 3 weeks and, oh my God, it's a whole relationship, world ends, and then they're at each other's throat the rest of their lives. So
that happens. They meet at a bear run, and yeah. and then there you go.
Yeah.
And they're together for
the 3-day relationship.
The 3-day. No,
it's kind of interesting how we define our relationship with time frames, because there have been studies that identify different things that you do, especially within the gay couples, within the relationship, within this time frame. And most of the studies identify 6 stages. Like you, Ray, you've been with your partner almost 7 years, and yeah. they're pretty much collaborative years, maintenance years.
Yeah.
And this is the time that you pretty much build on your dreams, you know, your goals, build together your house, build together your careers. And hopefully it works, and it only works better if your partner supports you. And there's been research that shows that if you come out to your employment, place of employment, you tend to do better at work and also with your partner too, which is quite interesting.
If you're out to work,
you tend to be more productive at work. Your percentage of work productions is a lot higher than the ones that do not come out at work. And you do better at your intimate setting with your partner.
Oh, okay.
This is interesting. Well, how about those situations where, you know, families, you know, invite your special someone or bring your spouse? If there's a company party, bring your spouse or bring your special someone, and somebody brings it.
That's a very important question, because in my practice, what I tell these people that I work with, my patients, are it's you that needs to connect your partner with your family. If you are introducing your partner to your family, and if you are introducing your family and friends to your partner, it's you that needs to bind them together. You need to present your partner in a good, positive way that states things like, this is the person I want to be with. Mm-hmm. This is the person I want to spend the rest of my life with. He makes me happy. She makes me happy. I want you guys to make amends with each other.
Mm-hmm.
No hips and buts. Because if you have any question marks, of course your family will think, in the beginning, they already think, oh, you're gay. We don't want you to be gay. Mm-hmm. You know. But if you have, you'll be presenting them with a question mark and not sure how to present your lifestyle and present this person to your family and friends, most likely they would have some doubts. So you have to present it, the person, in the most brilliant, wonderful way that you can imagine to present. And hopefully you will do the same thing with your family, to your partner.
Mm-hmm. Vice versa.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that way, you know, you are the binding force between the two.
That's right. Yeah. Actually, that's what I did, but that's what I was doing this year, or last past year, 2007. I brought my partner, Mike, to California to meet the rest of my family, and which is something important for me, that I am serious, and I wanted to tell my mom that, Mom, this is Mike. I would like you to meet my partner, Mike. And it's always great to introduce each other to each other's family, because about 2 years ago I already met Mike's family in Maine. I went to Maine and met his family there. They accepted me, and then last October I brought Mike to California to meet my mom and my cousins and my family there, and they're so accommodating with Mike, and you know, it's important to for them to meet Mike for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you and John, I think I remember him saying that your mother lived with y'all for a little while.
She lived with us for about 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I really admire the woman, because in her culture, her culture of origin, there's no such thing as gay people. There are people that are feminine that don't get married. But mm-hmm. when I presented to her, it took her forever to turn around and ask me, what about all those girls you were dating? But I have to say that...
that was a phase.
That was going through a phase. I have to tell her that, you know, I like that person. I love that person. She was wonderful. But this is a person that I want you to like very much with. This is a person I want to spend the rest of my life with. And mm-hmm. I need you two to like each other, because it makes me happy.
Yeah.
And she lived with us for 7 years. It was kind of a trial for her, trial for me, because I was the first person I have to say, I'm gay.
Mm-hmm.
And she...
It's like coming out twice.
Yeah.
You came out first being gay, and then you came over just to present your partner.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like doing it twice, yeah. I guess.
And mm-hmm. she did pretty well. I mean, it amazed me, the witness her doing that. It makes me respect her more as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I love my mother, but I don't think we could live together again.
Really?
Yes. I love her to come out and visit, but after about 5 days, I'm ready to send her home. I love you, Mom, but...
Mm-hmm. I love my mom, too, but the same thing, too.
It's just like, we're too much alike.
It's going to be hard. Yeah, I understand. There are families... Oh, not families, but you know, there are gay couples who you know, they really shunned their family already to help my family. I'm happy right now with my partner, and you know, excluding the family. What can you say about that? That would be a negative. That would have some kind of a negative impact, would it?
Well, it's kind of important to remember that when you are gay, your support system is your gay community.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because unfortunately, a lot of us, when we come out, the family members do not accept us, and it maintains that way, and we progress being a gay person. We become more accepting toward being who are we as an individual, away from the family norms that say that, no, you're not gay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as we progress, we found couples and become a partner. And as we do that, we move further away from family support or family of origin.
Immediate family.
Correct.
Okay.
So in my studies, I believe that the couples that are together very strongly, they have, again, first support is from the gay community. But my studies also says that your relationship is stronger if you have support of the family too. Mm-hmm. Support of siblings, support of families, and yes, support of your friends from the past that you have made friends in your childhood.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the ideal thing to be in a gay relationship without a lot of support, because the best thing for you to have a support of everyone. Because being in a relationship is not easy.
Mm-hmm. Just like a straight relationship either, right?
It's not very easy. But, you know, you find what is best for you to maintain a relationship, you know, in a gay couple. You know. And if the family is not supportive of you, it might be the best thing for you not to listen to their voice,
mm-hmm.
the negative voice. It's not right. Don't do it. You know.
Yeah, and we have some friends that are been dealing with that lately. Their families go hot and cold, and you know, they'll go and have barbecues and everything be, and everything's fine. But the holidays come around and they want to bring their partner, and it turns into this big blow up with the family. Mm-hmm. And I know a couple that we both know have gone through that this year. One of them just quit talking to their mom completely, and the other one is just quit doing anything with his parents because they make a big rigmarole about it every holiday when they want to come over and spend Christmas with them, and they want to bring their partner, and it's always a big ordeal. And they just, I think this year they just said, screw it, and we're going to start doing our own thing. Mm-hmm. So, and a lot of people go through that, I think. I think that's why a lot of gay people around the holidays get, I probably deal with depression more than mm-hmm. any other time of the year because they can't be with their families, and they're kind of stuck in this in-between point.
You know, to respond to what Ray is saying, I work in a psychiatric hospital most of my career life, and I'm always interested in doing a research on the percentage of the mental health inpatient patients, because there seems to be higher percentage of gay people in mental health hospitals.
It's because the family drove them crazy.
Because the family drove them crazy.
It could be. Okay. Who knows?
The own family drove them crazy. All right.
But it's interesting because it just shows you that, you know, there's such a need for help among our populations, the gay population.
Yeah, that's what in my experience, surrounding myself with a lot of friends who are very supportive of the relationship that really helps. Okay, probably some background. What I did before, what happened to me before, I had a relationship before many years ago, and it was like, marry me now and forget about your friends. You know, it's like he said, you know, let's get married and you'll never see your friends again. That really struck me the most because the friends that I had before, until now, of course, mm-hmm. they're the ones who give support to the relationship, mm-hmm. and you know that relationship just really went downhill.
Was he accepting of his gayness?
Oh yeah, being a gay person? Yeah, we both are. Okay. We both are. So you see, it's just that the relationship didn't work because he didn't like the friends that I have. Mm-hmm. How about that? what about that situation?
Yeah. Before we were talking about time frame for gay couples.
Oh yeah, time frame. Okay.
There is a time frame where maintenance, where couples learning to be an individual and at the same time understanding that being in a relationship, you need to be together. So figuring out when it's to be okay to be an individual and at the same time maintaining a relationship is very, very sensitive issues. For myself, if I think that's the most sensitive thing in a gay relationship, I will be hit. Mm-hmm. Because remember, your partner is your number one support. So when you go to, when you have problems, where you go when you have pain, where you go when you're happy is you go to your partner. Mm-hmm. And being doing that consistently all the time, you can develop some codependency issues. And at the same time, you would like to be an independent too. Person, so when you go there all the time, you kind of lose yourself as an individual. And a lot of times, in an unhealthy relationship, especially a gay relationship that doesn't have a lot of support outside of the relationship itself, you can become okay. Where our relationship would survive if we do things together all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, and that could drive away to balance out being an individual and to balance out being in a healthy relationship and not be codependency. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very sensitive to figure it out for anyone that is in a relationship itself. And for someone that doesn't know how to figure themselves outside of the relationship, it can make the partner, I need to be out of here.
Yeah, it's like a ring in the neck.
Right,
you know,
right.
It's like a ball and chain.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So the balance of individual and a couple is very interesting and very delicate for me, in my work and for my own perspective.
So you're saying, in your experience, you've seen people who are, you know, they spend too much time together and way too much time together, and they don't do things separately to give themselves individuality. That would be a problem for the relationship.
Say in a gay relationship, not like the straight relationship, they have children, they have family members, they have neighbors that are more intertwined into the relationship itself. Mm-hmm. So it's easy to not to be too enmeshed with each other. Mm-hmm. Whereas you have two men and a man together, the only thing that enmeshed between them is their friends and their work.
That's right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so it's easy to lose each other individually together. So you need to figure out where I can be myself healthy and where I can be with you together healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, just like what we do.
Yeah.
Mike loves football. Mm-hmm. And, okay, go do your football thing. Okay, I'll go upstairs and geek out. I'll be on my computer. I'll be on my Mac just surfing a little or podcasting or probably programming or geeking out on sci-fi. Mm-hmm. And so we do things individually too. You do that too, right? Don't you?
Well, and one of the things that I have a hard time in my and John's relationship is because I'm involved in doing co-hosting on this, being on the triad of HAB, going to school, having to do all this, you know, going out in the public and doing all this kind of stuff, and John doesn't mind going out, but he wants nothing to do with that. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of hard to try to mesh that together, because he wants to do his own thing and I want to go out and do stuff with him. But it's like, okay, it's like this week I was like, all right, this is what I got to do this weekend. I got this, what do you want to do with me? I mean, what do you feel like you want to go with me and stuff? And sometimes it's like nothing, and then sometimes, okay, I'll go do that with you. So it's kind of hard to, I mean, you know, I like doing my own individual stuff, and some of the stuff I don't mind going out by myself, but you know, it's like some events I like to drag him along so I have, you know, somebody with me.
go to just, opera. Come on, let's go.
No. So, see, like Ray Margaret, like Margaret
maybe
Cho,
not that one.
But like Margaret Cho last night, that was a couple thing that we could do. That I know he likes Margaret Cho. I like Margaret Cho. So as soon as I heard she's in town, I got tickets for us. So, but you know, it's like tonight is HAB social. Okay, he's not going to come to that.
Why not? It's social.
Well, you know, he's
hot
got
guys.
He's got work to do, and then I got to go to coronation after that to bartend a little bit for them, and I'm definitely he's not interested in that. So, you know, but it's still nice, you know, because you know I've always kind of had this idea. It's like, okay, I need the first lady behind me, and I don't have so
the first lady.
You know,
how about you, Dr. John? If you don't mind mentioning it, you know. Do you have some kind of dynamic, like some kind of similar dynamics with your partner?
If you put me and John together, my partner, we're so different. Ray is nodding his head because we're very different.
Okay.
But when I first met him, I felt a sense of lost. I felt like, where have you been? How come I haven't met you all these years?
Mm-hmm.
And but if you really look at us closely, we have the more important things that we are very similar. Family is very important to him.
Mm-hmm.
And family is very important to me. Mm-hmm. Committed relationship is more important to him than me, and I'm doing the study. Uh-huh. And I dedicate my study to him.
You've been studying him?
No,
you dedicate.
Well, that too. But as far as the work ethics, I mean, he works, and I mean, if anybody that works harder than me is him. Mm-hmm. John is not afraid of working, and I really admire people that go and get what they want. Mm-hmm. And he works hard to get what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's one of the things that he always say that, you know, he get a prize, and what's the prize? He got me, because he said that he works very hard to get it. You know. For example, he cooked. He learned to cook and never repeat his dish for 1 year. I always cook something different for dinner for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the things that, you know, if you really look behind the door, I mean, people think John is very quiet, but when we're together, he's the one that talks more than me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But I mean, one of the things that, you know, where gay relationships, when they first get together, you know, the first year, particularly the first year, the melting together year, what the couple is usually doing is that they tend to look at the positive and de-emphasize the negative, which is very important in building the very fragile, you know, stage of getting together, you know. And I think it's very important, like, if I have looked at that in John when we first met, I probably would not be with him because he's not a good housekeeper.
Okay.
And I look over and I know there's more important things than looking at, oh, he's not picking up after himself.
Yeah, leaving the clothes in the floor. Oh, that drives me crazy.
See, me and John are lucky in that aspect. We're both horrible housekeepers, so we hire somebody to do that.
Okay. Yeah.
Wow. And if you look at that, you know, there's more, I think the underlying values of it's what I value in a person instead of just a little knick-knack things that could ruin the potential of having a wonderful relationship.
Yeah. You know. These are just small things.
And I think that's the problem most time in most relationships, because I know I do it all the time. It's the little things, those little annoying habits, things that they do that just drive you up the wall and make you want to kill them, that blow up and just are like, why, you know, and it, you know, like, why did that little thing blow the, you know, get out of proportion? But I mean, I talking to other people, it's the same thing. In other relationships, it's the same thing with them. It's not that their partner's done anything wrong. It's just that's the little things that you focus on, and you and it just, you know, and because it's rubbing you the wrong way, you put all your negative energy into that. Mm-hmm. So,
but that could also be the other way. Those are things that you don't like, you dislike, but. If does it happen anymore, or if God forbid, you know, it that you split up or break up, that's something you would miss. Yeah. Oh my God, I remember these things. I remember those days. Yeah. You know.
Well, most sad songs are about, you know, I'm laying here looking at the floor, wanting to know where your shirts are so I could smell them. You know, stuff. Like, I mean, you know, it's all, you know, it's always a sad song about remembering the negative stuff that they did, but that's what you miss. So.
Yeah.
In the period of nesting, you know, when the couples are nesting together, you know, and they figure out, you know, who do what. Yeah. John clean up, like you, John cleans up after you. And then you do what you're good at. The couple needs to figure out, okay, you're good at what you do, go ahead and do it. Mm-hmm. And I need to figure out what I'm good at doing, I'm going to do it. Okay? And if you are not happy about that, that's when you start thinking, I'm not in a relationship that I want. And that usually happened during the nesting period, 2-3 years into the relationship. Because after you have fused together, melt together, and put your stuff together, moving together, and then you figure out, okay, now you're good at this, you're good at that. Let's see how it would work. And if you're still not happy with the gray areas, or if you're still not good at what I think you're good at, then you start feeling, oh, I'm not in a very good relationship here. Okay. Because now it's not like the first year, it's more like everything is wonderful and it's
the honeymoon's all over.
Yeah.
Honeymoon's over.
But this melting period, it's more like on emotional arousals. You know, it's more not just physical, but more in depth issues that you're dealing with.
It's like you're very comfortable with each other already, and you like you said, nesting. You two are nesting already.
You're building a house together, building what works together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. You know how I've realized, and this is probably pretty gross, but how I've realized that when I'm comfortable around people is if, like, and we take Victor for example. Me and Victor used to go out and, you know, hang out and do a lot of stuff together. And we went to a bar one night. We both went to the bathroom at the same time. And it was one of the, and I'm pee shy as I'll get out. I mean, it's just one of those weird things about me. But I walked up, but we both walked up to the urinal, sat there talking to each other, and I used the bathroom. And I took a leak, and I was just like, And it just hit me, and I looked over at him, and he was like, "What?" I said, "I must be very comfortable around you. It got used to you and be very comfortable around you after 4 years, because if it was anybody else, I wouldn't be able to stand here and pee."
Uh-huh.
And he looked at me like I was crazy, but I was. But you know, and that's the, you know, stuff like that that I think that I noticed about being with John and around other people, about exactly where do you feel comfortable with somebody, you know, doing certain stuff around them, you know, just acting the way you act, you know, because there's some, when some people I know that are my friends come over, I act different than I do around others.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because they're really different people. It's just, I think it's different comfort levels about what you feel like saying and doing, mm-hmm. and yeah. how relaxed you are about them. So
it's true.
In a gay relationship, we play roles.
Yeah.
One of the things that I find very interesting is people ask, who plays a man? Who plays a woman? The feminine and masculine role. When you come into a relationship, you pretty much know what role you play in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know you're the feminine one. You know you're the masculine one. What I found in my studies that, for example, the feminine role, they as comfortable as you are, you still take offense to a lot of things, such as you go girl.
You go girl.
Yes.
You go girl.
Such statements are not very positive commenting, mm-hmm. because it's, although it's said, could be pepped kind of a talk or could be jokingly, it still has some negative comments, yeah. negative connotations with that. So in relationship, you, as even though you play roles, you still need to respond respectfully. Okay. Like, oh, I appreciate you picking up after me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not saying that, pick it up,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you're good at that. Just go ahead and pick it up after me. You know? So it's interesting in the way that although I'm comfortable with my role, but I still need some validation from you to say that, you know, what I'm doing is appreciated.
Yeah.
And it will make me
validation.
Do it more.
That's right.
You know, mm-hmm. enjoy it more. So,
well, one of the things that B-Talk talked about in relationships was roles in relationship. It's not as much as being masculine and feminine, but being more like a gardener and a flower.
Mm.
That you got the nurturer.
I noticed that. I like that.
And and I thought that was very good, because it gets very odd when you start talking about a gay relationship and you got masculine and feminine roles.
Mm.
And the only reason it's like that is because that's kind of what society's peg them as, that this is what a woman does and this is what a man does.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of bad, because that lines, because I know a lot of men that are straight that are more domestic than their wives ever thought about being.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're the ones that come home, clean, cook, take care of the kids, and the wives are out, you know, doing whatever. But so I like when they talked about being the gardener and the flower, and then in a relationship, and then they made a kind of a comment that said two gardeners can be in a relationship. And a gardener and flower can be in a relationship, but two flowers can't be in a relationship.
Yeah.
So, and I thought that was very interesting. And I was like, well, how do you determine what you are? Are you the nurturing type? Or are you the one that needs to be nurtured all the time?
Well, some people, mm-hmm. they consider themselves both.
Yeah.
I'm the one who, you know, taking care of Mike, but at the same time, takes care of me. And there are things like he would ask for something and I would give it, or the same vice versa, I would ask for something. So it's really, well, personally with me and Mike, it's really just, you know, really give and take. And I would say it's both for us. Yeah.
So John's probably going to kill me if he listens to this episode, but I think I'm the garden and he's the flower.
Oh, he's going to kill you.
Yeah. So, but you know, I just think it's very interesting that, you know, and it's kind of funny that in some gay relationships, because you do have one partner that sometimes is more effeminate than the other, you know, and their mannerisms and stuff. So that even portrays even more to it. That you have a masculine effect.
Yeah, it stereotypes the planter and the flower. I think John would like to think that he's a planter, but I think I am the planter, because
mm-hmm.
he does more personal growth, mm-hmm. you know, which with my watchful eyes, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think we play both roles, but at times he's a better planter, and at times I am a better planter than he is.
Oh, okay. So you're both, I guess. Yeah.
I guess so.
Yeah. Okay. Ray, some of the points you have here is about the gay deathbed sin syndrome.
Yeah, that, you know, a lot of couples get into relationships, and after like 1 or 2 years, the sex just is kind of over with, and they stay in the relationship because they can't stand to be alone and not be in the relationship, but they can't get that, I guess, the newest of the relationship or their set, you know, because they've kind of become bored with each other sexually. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering, in your studies, did you find that a lot? And is there anything that triggers that? What can you do to it?
Well, in my study, I really didn't look at the sexual nature of the gay couple. But it has, I mean, it's just part of it. It's in the neighborhood, too.
Yeah, yeah. But it's part of it. It's a factor.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What I found out is that, remember, you're right, the second year, the nesting year. This is the years that when you are building together and you're not happy. Because if the first year is mostly romantic, physical wonderfulness that the couple are building together, now it's more on an emotional level at the next level, the second, third year. And that's when the sexual nature starts decreasing. Mm-hmm. And it happens when you're not happy with each other. If you're not happy with, you're not doing your bargaining, I'm not doing my part of my relationship, and then the couple start, if you're not happy together, you tend not to be sexual with each other. You know, the level of emotion is the necessary part of being physically aroused with each other too. Okay, and if you're not happy together, you most likely will look outside of the relationship and say, is there something out there, someone out there better than what I have right now?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And
grass is always greener on the side.
Correct. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, with the lesbian couple, it's a lot easier to not witness the physicality of the evidence. The lesbians can have sex without achieving orgasms, and you can still say, oh, they're still doing good. Whereas for a gay couple, if one do not achieve arousal, it's evidence right there. He's not happy with me sexually. And things goes down the tube, starting to go down the tube, because you start wondering, the other person that achieved arousal would start thinking, now, is there anything wrong with me now? What's happening right now? Is he not happy? Because you see the evidence of it.
Yeah.
He's not aroused. If he's not aroused, he's not happy. He's not sexually happy with me. So it's in a gay relationship, it's hard to hide it, evidence. Whereas in a lesbian relationship, it's easier to hide it. You know? And the more hard it becomes not to achieve the arousal, the harder it becomes and more evidence, because you see it not happening together anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so it's just more evidence than in gay couples than in a lesbian couple.
So you did this in observation only on your part. This is what you observed.
It is what I observe and study.
Okay,
and
it's not necessarily you provided a solution or probably a suggestion. Have you done
well?
That?
It's hard to when a couple come to therapy. It's hard to if one of them wants out. It's hard to tell him, no, don't get out. Stay in a relationship, because you cannot tell what the person wants out of the therapy. You know, but the couple come together, and the first thing you ask is that, do you want to stay together? And if the goal is that they want to stay together, okay, now, what would help the relationship stay together? And if one is such, I want more sex in the bed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then let's work toward things that help the sex in bed, so the other aspect of a relationship will be better too. But if the other person say that, well, he's not arousing me in bed, I'm not excited in bed, I need out. You know, so it's very hard to put the goal to the patients if mm-hmm. they come to see you. So in a gay couple therapy, when they come, you have to ask them, what do they want out of the relationship, want out of the therapy itself? Mm-hmm. You know? So it's not something you just suggested. No, you stay together. Mm-hmm. Because if you stay together, you'll be happier in sex.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know.
How about other couples? They have a different solution. They add a third person.
Yeah, that's another thing, because lately I've run into a couple, into a group of people that are all in triad relationships. And then we're not talking about like triad Houston area bears.
No.
We're talking about there's actually three people in the relationship. And I've known a couple of people that have had a third. And I'm like, well, what kind of dynamic does that play? Because God knows it's hard enough with two dicks in a relationship, much less three.
Have you experienced
what
that?
What you going
have
to
you
play with?
Anyone?
Yeah. I have not experienced that in my private relationships. But from what I experience in my studies and my in work is that it only works if the couple communicated together. But under that communication, there are some rules. For example, if the couple think kissing is special between them, they don't kiss the third person until it's agreed on.
Okay.
If, or another example would be, we can only do it together.
Okay.
No, you don't do it without me. Okay. But, you know, it happens, and I've seen a lot of couples that it works and put more hoop into the relationship. Mm-hmm. But it has to be communicated together where the couple agreed on it to do it. And if there is changes down the road too, they still need to agree too. Mm-hmm.
No. Okay, I'm sorry, but I think I find it kind of hot. I'm sorry. I got distracted there. Yeah, because
Maynard just suffered the three bears and Goldilocks syndrome.
He's thinking something. You know, why would I communicate that?
Okay, just, you know. Yeah, I understand that there are people, there are agreements, there are having a third, there are boundaries. Mm. You shouldn't do this, But the... I get, like you said, that happens that they don't kiss. They don't kiss the third, or maybe they do on occasion. I don't know.
Well, see, that's it. If it's found out that you break the rules that you agreed on, for example, not kissing the third person, and then the partner find out that you kissed that third person, that's when it creates problem in that relationship. Because remember, the trust issue is very important, especially in a gay relationship, because that's your number one support.
Uh-huh.
Beside your friends, your partner is number one support.
Okay. That's right.
So, and what about open relationships? Gay couples that are in open relationships. I know a lot of people say that, oh, it's just because they're not having sex anymore, so they're looking for it somewhere else. And I know that me and John we've had open relationship, we closed it, we had open relationship. You know, it's kind of depending on what's going on in our lives. You know, I mean, if we feel like we're pulling too far apart, then we say, no, stop. And we work our own stuff out. And then if it opens up, then we decide to open it back up. We do. But a lot of people say, and even though we were having sex with other people, it was, we were still having sex with each other. I mean, and it wasn't anything like, well, we wasn't having sex and we were using this as our sex outlet. But what have you run across with other couples that have open relationships? What things have they run into? Have you seen anything different about them that, you know, are they just crazy for trying to do that? Or I guess let's put it this way. As couples have either, you know, because there are some couples that are very monogamous, which I totally understand, and there are some people that are not monogamous at all, and there's those couples that say they're monogamous, but when they're not together, they're out running around with everybody else. So, yeah. What have you run into? What things have you seen that you can...
From what I experience at work, the couple that come together to seek help are the ones that are opened and... Since they've been open to other sexual partners, they experience more stress within the relationship.
That's more stressful.
Yeah, because you already have your set of problems together. And when you branch out to other set of people and their set of problems too, you almost tripled your problems. Okay. It just have more things to juggle with. But like you said, if you have decided that you need to do that and you're fine with it, that's fine. But it just allows you to have more emotional problems, more stressors to deal with. You know? Mm-hmm. Has it worked? Yeah, I've seen a lot of couples that still come and see help and still worked out very successfully. But it just creates more stress for them to deal with.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a question about age gaps. I was talking to Wayne earlier.
Yeah.
He mentioned about, you know, there are couples who are, who have, gay couples who are, who have a big age gap, 10 years maybe. Like Mike and I. Mike and myself, we are 10 years apart.
Huh, I got you beat. We're 11 years apart.
11 years?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Really.
Oh, wait, 11. I think it's 11 too. Oh, I don't know. Math is hard. Anyway, okay. So, what do you think of that, John?
Well, I wish that, you know, again, I actually did not study it, but I have a lot of friends that are like that too. And I always ask them questions, you know. Unfortunately, in a relationship like that, not talking about you folks, from there are couples that are about 20, 30 years differences too, okay? Talking about power struggle, I mean, those kind of relations have a lot of power struggle, and it's expected because there's one that is 10 years more experience, educationally, life story, financial establishment.
Mm-hmm.
From what I found out was the person that is older tends to have more money and tends to be more established. And because of such, in the decision-making time, that person tends to have the more control of the decision-making. Mm-hmm. And again, you have to remember, in a heterosexual couple and gay couple, there's obvious man and obvious woman. In a gay couple, there's two men, two mm-hmm. women. It's not that obvious, you know. So you tend to see not much obvious decisions. There tend to be more equals.
Mm-hmm.
Choices tend to be more equal than men and women. So when you put that obviousness of I have more power at what to say in decision making because I have more substantial money, time, experience, it makes a couple more of a separate. So again, the couple like that needs to learn how to juggle with that and say, okay, I understand. I understand you're more experienced and older and wiser. I need to listen to you in that aspect. You know, mm-hmm. in the other aspect, I have more energy. Listen to me in this aspect. You know, mm-hmm. So again, they still need to juggle their differences. But like I said, what I found out is that person with more money, more age, tend to be more of a dominant one when it comes to decision making.
Mm-hmm. You know, the one who has the bread makes
the bread. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tends to
do well, so that even throws a bigger wrench in the mind in John's relationship because he makes all the money
mm-hmm.
in the relationship. But I will say, and it's not as bad now. I mean, there's still a big gap there. But when we first started dating, he was 21 and I was 32.
Cradle snatcher.
Oh, please. He was dating a guy I'm that kidding. Was 16 years difference between him before that. And my biggest thing was, you know, because I grew up with a parent that said, you can do that if you want to, but I'm telling you, you know, it's like one of those things like I told you so, and you go out and do it, and then of course it comes true, and they're like, well, I told you so. That's been my hardest thing is not to do that in this relationship. Even though I want to do it all the time, it's like, mm-hmm. well, I told you I'd do that, but, you know, mm-hmm. and trying to, you know, because he's young, he wanted to go out and do stuff and party and bar hop and all that, which mm-hmm. was fine to a certain mm-hmm. extent, but, you know, I'm at the point where I'm happy to stay at home most times and, right. and then, you know, get out and do stuff on the weekends, not during the week, but. Working that out and trying to, and it's been, that was very, and it's still very frustrating for me for letting him, because he has to grow up on his own.
Mm-hmm.
He has to make the mistakes, you know.
That you have made in the past.
That I've made. Yeah. And right. try, you know, and I know he sees it as me being very controlling in the relationship, as me trying to tell him what to do. And I know I'll probably bring it across that way, and that's not what it is. It's, or that's the way I'm not intending it to come across that way. I'm intending it to come across as, hey, I've been there. I know what you're going mm-hmm. through.
Learn the ropes yourself.
You know, mm-hmm. and I'm just trying to help. But, you know, but it usually ends up they're going to do
most people are going to do what they want to anyhow. Correct. So, and correct. That's where the friction comes mm-hmm. in there with us. Mm-hmm. So, and at some point you just get to the point where you just have to stand back and kind of let it happen. And, you know, it's, and that happened in the last couple of weeks that something major happened in our relationship. And I had to stand back and say, okay, if this is going to work, he's going to make the choice to do this. And no matter what I do or what I say can affect, you know, it's going to change that. So, mm-hmm. and I just kind of stayed back and kept my mouth shut and bit my tongue numerous times, but, mm-hmm. and, you know, I let it happen and let him grow and become the person that he needs to be.
Mm-hmm. So, well, you know, when, at the end of the day, you know where you're gonna be together.
Yeah.
It's part of the trusting in a relationship, and it only happens after years of being together. You know, you learn to trust with a little doubt in your mind.
There's always doubt.
There's always doubt. Definitely. Yeah. That's amazing. Wow. Let me see. Wow. We're running 51 minutes right now. Yeah. Okay. Well, so anything else you want to ask Dr. John here?
No. Are you? I know we were talking earlier before we got started that are you planning on doing any more research anytime soon? Or?
Well, like I was saying, you know, it would be very interesting to... Well, when I did my research, it was for general, pretty much look at all the gay people that are in a five-year, at least, together relationship. Mm-hmm. And it would be very interesting to look into more of a specific subgroups of gay society, like the bear group, you know.
I'm quite sure you're going to find a lot of things there. Yeah.
What works for you guys?
Yeah. So are you saying that you're going to conduct a study like that and people can contact you? And
well, I usually do is give them a survey, like a pre-test kind of a survey and just questionnaires. Mm-hmm. And after a while, get them together to a couple of seminars, mm-hmm. you know, just pretty much educational purposes or self-awareness seminar, mm-hmm. you know. And hopefully following that, it will motivate or help them figure out what works for them, what not work for them. So in doing such, it will help them work together better as a couple. Mm-hmm. And then after 6 months, you can give them another test, same test. And you would expect that because of the seminar and self-educational seminars, the result would be a little better.
After, okay. Yeah. And hopefully the answers will be the same.
The answer, mm-hmm. the questionnaires are the same.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. On a sliding scale, you put them on a sliding scale of the on a questionnaires. Hopefully, instead of one is low to five is highest, it will be a little bit toward better. Mm-hmm. You know?
Awesome.
Wow. Well, if you decide to do that, let us know.
Let us know.
We can advertise and get you all kind of bears up in here.
We'll throw you some bears your way.
Got to make the questionnaires more specialized because now it's more specific subgroup.
Yes, actually it is. Yeah. And people actually tend to dislike that you're a subgroup in a subgroup already because being gay is already in a subgroup already, and then there are bears and cubs, and there are labels that they were saying that people would say, but it's just easier that way to I was talking to Peter before, pigeonholing, getting people into certain categories, mm-hmm. and it helps in a lot of ways. At the same time, it also offends other people because mm-hmm. they don't like to be labeled. They don't like referred to be a certain kind of category, like a bear or
like
a chaser, or
me being categorized as a bear.
Yeah.
See, I don't think of myself as a bear. I think of myself as a twink that has a weight problem.
A twink with a weight problem. Okay. Yeah.
Bottom line is whatever works for you, that's where you belong. Oh,
exactly. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Just so happened that there's an obvious categorization. Mm-hmm. Like there's the bear community. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Well, I get excited to see different subgroups because it just shows you that our community is not confined. It comprised of a lot of uniqueness. It just look at the bears. There's a Filipino in a bear. You know, we'd expect a Filipino being in a bear club.
Yeah. I love
bears. actually, believe it or not, there's a lot of them.
Yeah, there's a lot of Filipinos. A lot of Asians, a lot of Filipinos.
There's a group in Houston. I don't know if you heard of them. It's called Asians and Friends. It's like bears and Asians.
Yeah, Asians and bears.
Asians and bears.
Yeah, that happens. Anyway, okay. So, well, we're running out of time. How can people contact you? How can people, you know, maybe ask questions if they want to contact you?
You can give them my email. Okay. That'll be a very good way to get through. Okay.
We can send him up a link on the website.
Yeah, or a link to the website.
Yeah, and we'll forward it to his email. That way, you know, he won't get inundated with all the nutcases that you like.
There you go.
Okay.
Because phone can be expensive.
Yeah.
But, you know, at work, I mean, I still, unfortunately, it's in East Texas, so I still need to keep my lifestyle a little bit more contained than being in town.
Yeah, that's right.
But, yeah, I'm pretty good at responding to my emails. By the way, I'm impressed with your promptness with your emails.
Oh, please, I'm sitting at
We started
work.
Calling each other. Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. Okay, so do you have any people you want to say hi to or shout out to? Or anybody who might be listening to this that
I hope my partner hears this. Because that's John.
Okay.
And John is, of course, working today, right?
Yeah. Of course, working.
Yeah, he's
today.
Always working.
Tell him to listen to this, so so he'll know what the.
And my colleagues
about.
Will be interesting for them to see this because I told them I'll be doing this, and they say, "What is bear?"
Oh, there you go. See, well, to all those who are new to this, to the bear community, yeah. Anyway. Well, we're not the ultimate
authority on bears.
Authority on bears. We just talk about them. Bears are, you know, the usual big guys, usually hairy, guys with beards.
The Kevin Smiths.
The Kevin Smith looking or the Kevin James looking guys. Yeah. And we talk about it because there's, like what we mentioned earlier, there's a community out there called the bear community, really. And these are things that are, we talk about bear in the show. We talk about bear musicians. Sometimes we have porn actors. We even have photographers. Like last week, we had Stephen Miller.
Miller, yes, yeah. Which was a very good show.
He was awesome. That was a good show.
Yes,
he was so much fun. Yeah. So yeah. So if you guys have comments, send us emails. nard@bearpodcast.com.
And ray@bearpodcast.com. Yeah. And we'll set up a link for Dr. John so you can shoot him an email if you want to.
Mm-hmm. Or you can send us an email so I can forward it to him because I think he's got his work email.
Yeah.
That's my private email. That's
private email? Yeah. Okay.
So that's okay, we'll put up a Dr.
Unless
John.
Unless you have an X2 account. No.
No,
they don't.
Well, at least not one he's going to talk about that John here, man.
Yeah, that's right. John wouldn't like it. Sorry, John.
No, he wouldn't like that.
Okay, so guys, you can visit the website at bearpodcast.com, and we have an iPhone version.
At 206-222-BEAR. That's 206-222-2327. I didn't have it written down in front of me. Sorry.
Yeah, people can call in and leave voice messages.
Yeah.
And if they have questions in the next show, we'll play it and we'll do that.
Sure, let me know. I can help anyway.
Yeah. Well, I was talking about iPhone. We have an iPhone version of the website.
Oh, do we?
Yeah, so if you guys have an iPhone, go to bearpodcast.com/iPhone. And it's iPhone ready. So you just you'll see all the episodes there. If you use your, you know, flick your the web page on your fancy iPhones out there or iPod Touch, you can play the show from there. Of course, you have to have internet access. You know,
if you have an iPhone, you have internet access.
Yeah. So yeah, you can play this with your iPhone. Just go to bearpodcast.com/iPhone. Okay, thank you very much, Dr. John.
Yes, thank you, John, for coming.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, hopefully.
My pleasure. Anytime I can talk about gay couples, gay relationship, I'll be the front liner.
All right.
I'll be happy to do such.
Well, awesome. Cool. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate you giving your time this Saturday afternoon. So.
Okay. So, guys, also visit myspace.com/bearpodcast, and we'll catch you guys on the next episode. Many wolves in, many hugs.
Wolf, what a bear.
Podcast.
Wolf, what a bear.